Good afternoon. It's Mountain Edition. I'm Patrick Fort.
And I'm Marcy Grivenen. A developer behind a campaign in Aspen is infusing tens of thousands of dollars into an effort to build a hotel.
Base 2 Lodge is at the center of a ballot question. It was the theme of an Aspen Public Radio town hall meeting this week.
I see perspectives from each side, including that of the people that don't want change and those that want to see more growth in Aspen.
Voters in Snowmass Village recall a councilman who went to jail for drunk driving.
The fire departments in Carbondale and Basalt are asking voters for money in the fall election.
We don't have the luxury of a lot of businesses. When you don't have the money, then you don't take on as many jobs. But in this business, when the call comes, we have to answer the call.
Construction on a new school in Carbondale is nearing completion.
And an Aspen skiing company executive is named to a statewide committee for outdoor recreation.
Finally, Pitkin County staff will be displaced ahead of a major construction project.
Those stories and more coming up on Mountain Edition. Campaign finance reports were filed with the City of Aspen Wednesday, and the developer behind the proposed Base 2 Lodge has raised 10 times more than the opposition. Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Zachariasen reports.
Prominent downtown landlord Mark Hunt has donated $50,000 to his issue committee, Citizens for Aspen Alive. His opposition, Vote No on Base 2, has raised just over $4,000 between June 16th and October 8th. So far, Hunt's camp has spent more than $13,000. The majority has been on companies generating email blasts and newspaper advertising. Only $34 has been spent on pizza. The Vote No group has about 24 contributors, donating between $20 and $350. That committee has emptied its coffers on things like stamps, campaign stickers, and newspaper ads. There are no contribution limits for issue committees in the City of Aspen elections. The next campaign finance reports are due October 27th. That is also when raising and spending ends. Ballots should arrive in mailboxes this week. Carolyn Zachariasen, Aspen Public Radio News.
Supporters and opponents of the Base 2 hotel development in Aspen debated density, parking, and employee housing Tuesday.
Aspen Public Radio held a town hall meeting at the Belly Up regarding ballot question 2A. If voters approve it, Base 2 Lodge could become a reality.
Base 2 was approved by City Council, but a citizen petition forced it to this fall's ballot. If built, it would replace a gas station on the corner of Monarch and Main Streets. One issue Tuesday was parking. Opponents doubt the developer's promises for an underground parking garage at Base 2. Developer Mark Hunt says he's committed.
Oh, I can say there's a guarantee for on-site parking, or if there's not, then the project doesn't go forward.
Opponents argue Hunt's promises are just that, promises, and are not legally binding. On the issue of employee housing, opponent Ward Howenstein argues Base 2 won't provide enough units for workers.
We know it's going to take at least 11 employees, probably more, to run that lodge, and Base 2 supplies employee mitigation for 1.63.
Base 2 is following city law by providing less than 2 units, and Hunt, who has multiple Aspen properties, says he's already supplied housing in partnership with another developer, Peter Fornell.
Collectively with Peter, we're actually providing close to 100.
He says the rooms at Base 2 will be affordable. Aspen Public Radio News Director Carolyn Zachariasen questioned the price.
You've said it's going to be $400 a night sometimes. How is that affordable?
I mean, I'd be shocked, you know, for a room that size, you know, to ever get to 400. I've always said that I think they would average out at 200.
Opponents say Base 2 violates zoning rules and doesn't fit in the area where it's proposed. Howenstein says it's an example of the wrong kind of growth for Aspen.
I represent and want to represent and want to see Aspen retain its character, retain what it is about this town that makes it so special. And if we continue to grow, if we continue to urbanize, we're going to kill the golden goose.
His words resonated with Aspen resident A.J. Wosky. He's voting against the lodge.
If we allow this one, and then there's another one, and then another little one, and then before you know it, somebody owns so much of the town and they have so much interest and power, I don't want to see this place turn into Vail.
Voter Damian Williamson supports Base 2 and thinks it will bring vitality.
I'm definitely for a younger, more vibrant Aspen where people, you know, younger folks and folks from Detroit can really come and have a place to stay that's affordable.
One voter who's undecided says the most contentious area is nostalgia versus moving the town forward. He sees validity in both sides. Thomas Good will replace Chris Jacobson on the Snowmass Village Town Council. Aspen Public Radio's Allison Bektesh reports.
Almost 700 people voted in the town's first recall election. Over 90% voted to oust Chris Jacobson. Only 57 people voted for him to retain his seat on the Snowmass Village Town Council. Jacobson was arrested this past summer for allegedly driving drunk and causing an estimated $14,000 in damage to the county jail. A citizen petition led to the recall. With 341 votes, Tom Good defeated his two opponents and will be sworn in at the next council meeting. Good was celebrating with supporters Tuesday night at Taster's Pizza. He says he has a lot of respect for Jamie Knowlton, who came in second. Good sees himself as one of the people and believes that that is what set him apart.
I feel like I'm a regular person in the village. I've lived here for a long time, and I feel like I have a finger on the pulse of the community.
Good serves on the Planning Commission, which is reviewing the development of Base Village. He says he's looking forward to moving beyond the stalled project. Chris Jacobson's next court appearance is October 26th. Allison Bektesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Marcy Krivenin. If you missed the first part of today's show, you can find a podcast on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Residents will be asked whether to support their local fire districts through property taxes in this fall's election. Allison Bektesh visited the Carbondale and Basalt fire departments to find out why they are asking the public for their financial support.
It's Fire Safety Week, and a second grade class is getting a tour of the Carbondale Fire Department.
Protective equipment. So they would get the emergency tones on their pager like this, and they would know to come here to put their personal protective equipment. So let's check it out. Come on in through here.
Community outreach is one of the services that Carbondale and Rural Fire Protection District provides. Mike Kennedy, vice president of the board of directors, says a failed property tax question in 2013 came down to an unfamiliarity with the other roles of the district. This year, they are again asking voters to approve a ballot measure that would raise property taxes to help fund the fire department. Kennedy says if the measure fails again, the fire district will not be able to function much longer. Despite the loss of funds due to property assessments going down, the nature of emergency response can't be cut.
We could get by, but we would burn up the remainder of our reserves. We don't have the luxury of a lot of businesses. You know, a lot of businesses, when you don't have the money, then you don't take on as many jobs, or you know, you live without a secretary, or whatever it might be. But in this business, when the call comes, we have to answer the call. It's not a question of, oh, geez, we don't have enough people today, we can't do that. Tell them no. You know, we can't do that. We have to be there. It's a 24/7 thing, and there's no choice.
Ballot issue 4B puts a 2-year sunset on the tax hike, something the 2013 measure did not have. It would amount to $15 per $100,000 of property value. The Carbondale Fire Department relies on a mix of paid staff and volunteers. Staff works for 48 hours at a time. Most days, there are only 2 people on hand to respond to calls. Fire Chief Ron Leach says that, over the last few years, emergency response time has grown, and it's been hard to staff simultaneous calls.
An ambulance call to Marble, by the time they leave here, go to Marble, pick the patient up, go to the hospital, come back, that's a 3-hour ordeal. Now, during that 3 hours, if there's a second call, who's to go on that call? And sometimes there's 3 during that time period. Who's to man those? It's becoming more and more challenging, and that's what this election is about.
Looks like.
In Basalt, ballot measure 4A asks to extend a tax that residents are already paying. A 20-year bond will be all paid off this year. But Fire Chief Scott Thompson is hoping residents will be willing to pay the same amount in order to maintain the Basalt and Rural Fire Protection District's capital fund. The 20-year continuance would provide money for employee housing and big-ticket items like fire trucks. He says the growing population and new developments within the district require new equipment.
That's part of the problem with development. you know, we talk about pedestrian friendly and drawing people to the businesses so the sidewalks get larger, the parking gets smaller, the setbacks get greater for the fire departments. And one of the things that we're having problems with is everything's getting tight. Our old ladder truck is 20 years old. It has dual rear axles and it only has a 75-foot ladder. We need extended reach and a more maneuverable truck. And that's, you know, it's a huge ticket item because it's close to $1 million.
Residents who live in the portions of Pitkin, Eagle, Garfield, and Gunnison counties that include these districts will see ballot measure 4A, the basalt question, or 4B, the Carbondale question, on their election ballots this fall. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
The Republican field to challenge Democratic U.S. Senator Michael Bennet in 2016 is still very much up in the air. As Benta Berkland reports, some possible contenders have not ruled out entering the race.
Senator Bennett's seat is one of 10 that Democrats nationwide must defend next year. But so far, Republicans don't have a clear frontrunner. The GOP's brightest prospects, Congressman Mike Kaufman and Arapahoe County District Attorney George Brockler, are not running.
Republican strategists around the country look at Colorado, perhaps only in addition to Nevada, as their pickup opportunities next year with respect to the U.S. Senate. That's all theoretical, and elections are not conducted in theory.
That's nonpartisan independent political analyst Eric Sonderman. While vulnerable, he thinks there are other factors impacting the race in Bennett's favor.
It is a presidential year as opposed to that off year. Democrats in Colorado and in most other states tend to fare better in those presidential years with big turnout.
Chairman of the state Democratic Party, Rick Palacio, feels the lack of a big-name entrant is an early boost.
The fact that they are lacking really a credible or viable candidate on the Republican side for the U.S. Senate says a lot about the Republican Party in Colorado. They have been in disarray for some time. They lucked out in 2014 in finding a candidate that they could rally behind and that ran a good campaign and that took advantage of really a low tide for Democrats.
That's when Congressman Cory Gardner defeated incumbent Senator Mark Udall. And with a divided electorate, Palacio says Colorado is still a battleground state. Republicans say it's much too early to make any predictions on how tight the race will be. Party Chairman Steve House expects other candidates will emerge.
Our job is to make sure that each and every candidate who enters the race knows that we're here to support them. We support them all equally. It's going to be an exciting race either way because I think 16 is going to be a good Republican year. I'm very, very optimistic about our chances of defeating Michael Bennett.
Former GOP state chairman and political consultant Dick Wadhams shares the same view and thinks a robust Republican primary for the Senate nomination is a positive.
I think a wide open primary with a lot of different voices and candidates will be good for the party. It will generate interest. And from that, I think a good nominee will emerge.
The most high-profile candidate for the Republicans is State Senator Tim Neville from Littleton. He's a strong gun rights advocate, supports fewer tests in public schools, and ran a controversial and unsuccessful bill last session that would have helped parents obtain additional information from schools on everything from curriculum and medical decisions to school performance records.
We're not going to shy away from issues, whether it be issues that we brought up last year in the Parents' Bill of Rights, issues that are important to life. We don't feel that we need to shy away from those. We need to actually have the honest debates there, and we feel that the American people are ready to have those debates too.
While Democrats say Neville is too far to the right to win the moderates necessary for a victory, GOP Chairman Steve House says time will tell.
You know, Tim's going to have to make his case just like any other candidate would make it, but I'm not going to pre-label him too far to the right because I don't know his specific stance on issues in detail yet today.
Whether it's Neville or El Paso County Commissioner Daryl Glenn or former Small Business Administration head Greg Lopez or someone else, Dick Wadhams says the eventual nominee must have a broad message.
And you have to be able to talk about your social positions in a way that does not repel those who disagree with you, the independent voters. So I think Cory showed Republicans, and before him, Wayne Allard and Bill Owens showed, that you can be a strong conservative, even a social conservative, and still win in Colorado. But it's how you campaign. It's the priorities that you convey to voters.
Wadhams also says successful GOP candidates have embraced topics not typically associated with the right. During his Senate campaign, Cory Gardner highlighted his support for renewable energy. Eric Sonderman says that's a good model for the party heading into 2016.
The only statewide Republican candidate to win a high-profile race in the last decade or more was Cory Gardner, and he spent most of his election year running away from the fringe and trying to become as centrist as possible.
Candidates are running out of time to jump into the race to raise enough money and build the necessary infrastructure to win. Other well-known Republican names that have emerged recently include Senate Majority Leader Mark Scheffel, who would not comment for this story, and 3rd District Congressman Scott Tipton, who said he's very happy where he is, but they're not closing the door on any potential opportunity. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Glenwood Springs in Garfield County could see a new detox center, but it all depends on finding a place to put it. There hasn't been one for the last few years.
Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher spoke with Jackie Skramstad about that effort. She's regional director with Mind Springs Health.
Probably in the last year, there's been a community desire to investigate and restart a detox program in Glenwood Springs. Mind Springs has been asked to be part of that effort and operate the detox. So over the last year, the community's been having conversations, and we're moving to a point now where we are really looking for a location to house the detox program and really looking to finalize a funding methodology.
What kind of place are you looking for? I imagine there must be some very specific qualities.
We are looking to open a 2-bed detox, much like the detox that we operate in Pitkin County. The facility would have to have enough space to house 2 beds. It would have to have a bathroom and shower facility, some way of making food for people while they are in detox, and a little area for staff to kind of keep belongings, paperwork, that kind of thing.
Is it something where Mind Springs could rent the location, or would you have to buy it because of legal requirements?
We could rent, and that is actually one of the directions that I believe we're all looking at that option right now. It's a good interim step to lease the property, get the program up and running. Mind Springs has some capital projects. We hope to, at some point, sell our building on Highway 82. We do have property closer to Valley View that we would like to build on, and one of the conversations has been, what is the feasibility of embedding the detox in that location when we move? That may be a longer-term solution.
What's the timeline on that larger build and move?
That timeline is uncertain because it does involve selling our Highway 82 property. That property has been on the market. It's a large property, and it requires a special buyer.
Jackie Skramstad is regional director with Mind Springs Health. She spoke with Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Patrick Fort. To stay up to date with news in the Roaring Fork Valley, follow us on social media. Like us on Facebook, find Aspen Pub Radio on Twitter, or follow us on Instagram, Aspen Public Radio. Your news, your music, your station.
One of the newest, biggest buildings in Carbondale is a school. Administrators, teachers, and parents at Ross Montessori have been working for years to make the new location a reality.
Aspen Public Radio's Elise Thatcher took a tour of the new building, which is slated to open in a matter of months.
So right now you are looking at the entrance to the building.
Tricia Williams is over the moon about this construction site. She's development director for the school.
This will be a sidewalk, and so they can get out of their cars here on the sidewalk, or if their parents are parking and walking them in, they'll come across the crosswalk there and enter the building.
We're picking our way across the front side of the property, which is right off Highway 133 near town.
That's not open. We're going to sneak through right here. This side of the building gets to look at Sopris. We actually, at one point during the design phase, turned the building around so that the more common areas get to look at Sopris. And that way the classrooms don't fight over it. We'll walk around.
Ross Montessori started building the new school this past spring. It's costing at least $6.5 million. The majority of that is funded by a USDA rural development loan. Officials used fundraising and state grant money to purchase the land last year for more than $1 million. The Montessori education method is named after Italian physician and founder Maria Montessori. It's been around for 100 or so years, and the Ross Montessori School in Carbondale started 10 years ago. After limping along in mobile homes in the industrial side of town, this is about as shiny and dreamy as a new school can get. The outer shell of the building is mostly done, so construction crews are working on the concrete siding, a European design that looks exactly like wood.
So let's go to the classroom.
Right now, electricians are putting in wiring, and there's a backhoe digging outside.
These are kindergarten classrooms. The most important thing about a Montessori classroom is the actual classroom space. Plus, each classroom is fairly self-contained. They have sinks and they've got their own storage, and that way the teacher and the students can set up the workflow, because we don't have chairs and desks. We have a big open space that's filled with works, and children can work at a table if they want, on the floor if they want.
By works, Williams means projects, usually hands-on with blocks, beads, and other elements. The goal is to have at most 24 students in a classroom.
Because each student has a work plan that is customized to them, they're all not doing the same thing at the same time. This group of students might be working on the beads and doing math with the teacher, but then you've got 10 or 20 other students sitting around doing their own work, and it might be a language lesson, it might be math as well.
Williams only learned about Montessori in recent years, but she's just the kind of enthusiastic cheerleader you want to raise millions of dollars for a school like this one.
There's 3 hours in the morning where the students in the Montessori classroom are just doing their work. It's quiet. It's a wonderful thing to see. Just the busyness that's going on and the hum in the room.
And there's high demand in the mid-Roaring Fork Valley. The wait list for the school is so long, the federal government approved expanding its loan so more classrooms can be built right away. In the next phase, the school will add a gym and other common areas. And there are the more unglamorous but necessary aspects of a project like this one.
So this is our parking lot on the south side of the building. So that's Louise Lane.
Named after a local descendant of the longtime Thompson family. Williams' work is not over yet.
We are still fundraising, so we can eventually get asphalt poured in here, and we're getting solar panels.
So she's again rallying families and locals to help match a fund that will pay for those and other finishing touches. The new Ross Montessori School is on track to open in January. Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
An Aspen skiing company executive has been chosen to help build a new statewide effort around Colorado's multi-billion dollar outdoor recreation industry.
Auden Schindler was named to an advisory committee for the Colorado Outdoor Recreation Industry Office. Schindler is the SkiCo's vice president of sustainability.
Well, thanks for doing this.
Sure.
What does this new office do?
It's intended to help promote and protect Colorado's outdoor recreation economy. And it makes a lot of sense. This is a big piece of our economy, but at the same time, it's in many cases being loved to death. So there's a conservation aspect, there's a boosterism aspect, a promotion aspect, and just a sharing the story about Colorado piece.
You know, what will the advisory group be doing?
Well, I think everyone on the advisory group has a different role. I'll be coming at it from a climate and a conservation perspective. I think that if you look at the outdoor recreation assets Colorado has in our area, they're just being annihilated. Look at Maroon Bells, where you couldn't camp there because there were so many people and so many bears. And look at Hanging Lake, where a typical year you'd have 30,000 visitors there, and they had 80,000 visitors. This is a good thing. It's wonderful that so many people want to get outside, get healthy, and partake in the splendor of Colorado. But at the same time, it tells us that we need to better manage it. We need to develop other options for people, and we need to protect what we have.
So is that sort of the focus, I guess, that you intend to bring to the advisory group? Is this, you know, what's happening in the backcountry perspective?
Yeah, I think that, and I think that promoting outdoor recreation in Colorado is good because all of those people end up being outdoor and environmental constituents. So I think that I'm interested in the promotion piece, but I'm also interested in the protection piece and in using the office as a way to get people in government concerned about climate as well.
Auden Schindler is the Aspen Skiing Company's Vice President of Sustainability.
Major support for Aspen Public Radio's environmental reporting comes from the John Denver Aspen Glow Fund at the Aspen Community Foundation, promoting responsible stewardship of the lands and wilderness of Aspen and the Roaring Fork Valley.
Pitkin County staff are taking first steps to uproot and move ahead of a major construction project.
On Wednesday, the clerk and recorder's office received approval to sign leases to move into three Aspen spaces. It's one of several offices that will be displaced. Others will move to Basalt.
Clerk and recorder Janice Voss-Caudill slides her hand along a huge countertop that fills the entire office.
So it'll be this whole counter going down. And the counter will house 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people.
To get the massive piece of furniture to its new home a few blocks away, it'll be sliced into multiple pieces, then reassembled. Voss-Caudill's department handles elections, licenses, and motor vehicle registration. It interfaces with the public more than most other county offices. That's why the leases put her operations in the heart of Aspen.
We know that our election department will be moving into the Ute building. So staff will be on the second floor, as well as one or two staff on the main floor to assist customers, as well as the production of our election. It'll be the primary and the presidential next year.
The office is moving to make way for 16 months of construction. The annex building where the clerk operates is getting renovated, and a new 23,000-square-foot building will attach to it. The project was prompted by a need to update multiple county offices. County Manager John Peacock.
It's not about anticipation of hiring new folks. It's about accommodating the people that are serving the community now.
To avoid construction noise and asbestos exposure, many departments will move. Peacock says it's likely offices such as Human Resources, Information Technology, and the Attorney's Office will rent space in or near Basalt.
We're looking at alternatives down valley because they're so much cheaper.
The price of the entire renovation and construction project is about $20 million. That includes relocation and rental costs. Peacock estimates occupying the Basalt locations for up to 2 years could cost $700,000.
If you tried to keep folks in the project in a construction zone, we had estimated to be about the same. And so we felt it was better from a public service perspective and speed of getting the project done perspective to go ahead and lease space.
So what they're going to do is they're remodeling this building.
Yeah.
So next March, what we're doing is we're going to be moving out of here.
Right, I heard about that.
Back at the county clerk's office, Clerk Janice Voss-Caudill updates county resident Lisa Ruggieri about the move. Ruggieri says the relocation is fine with her.
I don't mind at all. East on Main or west on Main Street, that's a problem. This way, I don't mind at all. Stay in the core.
The elections department is planning a major public outreach campaign before the move early next year.
That's all for this week's Mountain Edition. Have a nice afternoon. I'm Patrick Fort.
And I'm Marcy Krivenin. To hear this show again or download a Mountain Edition podcast, head to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.